Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Okay, ladies, what are we going to talk about today? Dominique, word is on the street that you've got a topic for us to cover.
Oh, no, you're going to read for us this question that came in to our Ask Us a Question on the member site. And we're going to try to answer it for you. And Laurie and I have different ways of going at it. So we thought you'd like to hear us sort of emphasize different aspects of the answer. And
I'll just jump in as needed.
Okay, so here was the question that we got. It says, hi, everyone. Wondering what actions or statements to say to a loved one that changes my response from ignoring use to acknowledging it, but in a concise and calm way. How do you acknowledge use, but not in an accusatory way? Thanks.
So it's both actions and statements. And so what Laurie and I tend to do, I tend to go for the nuts and bolts military strategy of the thing. And Laurie fills in the feelings and the comments and the communications. And so let me just start by saying, I got stuck on this one. I was trying to write an answer because all I want to do is describe to her, let's take a very basic example, and I'm sorry, it's very sort of prototypical. I'm going to talk to moms. There's a lot of moms on our broadcast, but it could also be your wife or your husband coming home late and you had dinner planned because they got a raise, so you were excited and you had made a special meal and they're hours late, right? And normally you greet them at the door and you give them a boatload of accusation and distress and anger and you're just upset, right? And that this can lead somehow to getting into a fight and your loved one turning around and going back out to their car and driving away. It's happened. So safety is already paramount in this example. So you want to do something that's going to keep that loved one from going back out. So de-escalation is key and the communication is key. But you find yourself 3-4 hours, they're late, you have a pretty good idea what's going on, you're preparing the home for their arrival. At 5 hours late, you get to go do what you've always done, start calling the emergency rooms and the police, and you know, but it's not 5 hours yet. And right now you're just planning for their arrival. So you've turned down the lights, you've turned down the heat, you've put away the food, you've put away the dinner settings, you've gone to bed, you're in your pajamas, you're reading a book, the light is just on in your room. You hear them come through the door, and what are you going to say?
Well, what I would say is something like, I'm glad you're home, and see you in the morning.
I'm a little bit more obnoxious. I would say, I'm glad you're alive, and then go to bed.
Yep.
That's it.
I can see that.
That's it. There's no finger pointing. There's no how hurtful this is and inconsiderate. And don't you know what I go through? There's none of it. None of it. But what else has gone on right there? Will you turn around and head back to your bedroom? So what else is happening?
Oh, removing immediate rewards, which is you. Even staying and engaging in a difficult conversation or an argument, or that is still a reward. It's like, okay, you're still not going anywhere. It's kind of like, I see it as like the temper tantrum. It kind of aligns with the temper tantrum. When a toddler throws a temper tantrum, if you stay there and go, oh no, calm down, don't cry. The pediatrician always tells you that's rewarding that negative behavior and you're going to get a temper tantrum the next time something isn't going well because they want your attention. It's the same thing here. I'm not going to engage. I'm going to remove immediate rewards, which is my engagement.
And what else? We also removed dinner, you know, time on the couch together, whatever would have been a nice evening. All that just went away and you haven't said a thing about it.
But I also want to stress here, because I think that this is what where people kind of slide, which is if you look disappointed, if you look like you're being victimized, if you do the heavy sigh, then you are not doing what we're asking you to do. What we're asking you to do is be completely impassive about it. Basically, it's like, it's flat. You're being flat because you're not making this about you. You're just neutrally saying glad you're home and going to bed and not talking about it, not looking pathetic, not looking victimized, because a lot of this is, I can't believe you did this to me, which is what we're trying to shake out of this formula, because that absolutely is a setup for failure.
I'm glad you're bringing this up, Kayla, because I think that this is one of the issues with Module 5 and Module 6 is that people get entrenched in the emotion of it and doing it perfectly and scared to death they're doing it wrong. And if you can just bring it down to the most simple of terms or the most simple way to look at it, I look at it like this. If I'm out with a friend and my friend gets, you know, they drink, they imbibe way too much, do I want to spend the night having a really deep, meaningful conversation with that person? Is it worth my while? Are they even going to remember? Sometimes people get angry and, you know, when they've over imbibed and you don't even know what they're talking about. So is that the time for me to have a wonderful kumbaya or to try and be logical or to try and express how I'm feeling? No, it's not. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure they're safe, get them home, make sure they're in their bed, and then I'm going to remove all immediate rewards of not spending time with you, right? And it's not worth my time. And not because I don't care, because I do care, but it's not worth my time or their time to get into anything with this person right now. Even if I'm worried that they have been drinking too much, that is something I might go and address later. And this is the same type of thing. Your loved one comes in and they've been drinking or they've been using. There's actually no reason to get into a wonderful or deep or complicated or challenging conversation with them at that moment. And that's what you're doing. You're removing immediate rewards. Okay, see you tomorrow.
And the feeling is of disconnection. They're aghast. What's going on here? They've never said so little and been so calm, like something major has gone wrong here. And they feel the disconnection. And that disconnection would last through the morning. Let's say it was just drinking, pretty clean episode of just drinking. They're going to be hungover the next morning. You're going to continue this flat sort of affect until they're done with the hangover, because we look at use as right before, during, and right after. So you're going to continue to remove rewards, no coffee by their bedside, no hello, how you doing, no bucket, no, you know, just flat.
I just want to add to what you're saying, because I feel like we're running the risk of people saying, but that I don't feel that way and it's disingenuous and I'm angry and I'm hurt and I'm scared and I'm anxious. Yes, true. That's true. And what I think of when I think about this, it's basically when we talk about pause, the pause is before you're encountering them. In this case, it's like, I am going to calm my system down. I am going to practice quietly my tone so that I could do this flat thing, because it's not natural to me, because I really want to just yell at you or cry or be anxious and shaky. And you're basically, as we say in improv, this is your Oscar performance. This is where you're having, you're like by yourself, you're like, oh, dying there, I had the emergency room, blah, 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 blah. And then they come home and it's like, literally what we do in improv is you're having this crazy person and then you turn around and you're in this completely different state and you're like, hello, glad you're home. And then you turn away and you go back and you could freak out by yourself in the privacy of your own room.
There's an added piece in there too to think about. I don't know if you've ever had an encounter with someone who has been over imbibing, and then they say some things to you that they're not happy about, or they behave in a way that they don't understand how difficult this is or what they're doing in the moment. And then the next day, even if you don't live with the person and you drop them off at home, I've had situations where I've called up friends afterwards and have been like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I behaved that way, or I said those things. And there's nothing wrong with letting people sit with that. That is more powerful. That drives me to change my behavior. So if your loved one, you are removing rewards and they start going, oh, you know, you're walking away from me and you always do this and da-da-da. And they're, and yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll talk about it later. You know, we'll get to it later. there's nothing more powerful than them waking up the next day and having that internal, oh, I did something.
It's funny listening to you because it's like the light bulb moment for me, which is what we're creating is discomfort, which is so fun if you think about it. Because if they come home, you're like, oh, where have you been? Okay, I was worried the whole time. That is, it seems obnoxious, but it's very comfortable because it's familiar. It's the thing that you guys do all the time. It's the shtick, as I like to call it. It's your routine. Everybody loves routine. It's comfortable. It's familiar. And as soon as you do this new thing, you are introducing discomfort. And by the way, discomfort is an essential ingredient for change. Essential. Nobody changes with comfort. Nobody. Anybody on the world. You have to be uncomfortable to even think about changing.
I'm going to push back, I think, a little bit on that, because I do think, I think being uncomfortable and being really uncomfortable is a powerful piece in change and motivating people to change us, ourselves. Like anytime we want to change something like a job, or you want to get healthy, or you know, there is a chore that you have to get done around the house, right? It isn't until something happens that kind of facilitates that motivation and gets you to change. And oftentimes it is being uncomfortable. But I do think that there is an added piece in here that gets missed a lot. And that is the module 5 piece, that there's actually a tapping into the positive reasons why to change. And so I think it's very powerful when your loved one isn't using and you start to engage and you start to reward this positive behavior, that is also an impetus. I want this versus that. That was painful. This is wonderful. This makes me feel good. And I want more of this. So I do think that both come into play.
I was just talking about that situation. The positive to me is really the beam of light that you're giving for the person to follow. It's like having that miner's light. You're in the dark. You have no place to go. And when you are positive, then you're giving somebody the path. And by the way, we talked about this in the group, because I actually think this statement, I trust that you know what you need. You know, I trust you will figure this out. When somebody does something positive that you're like, wow, I really noticed this. So that you're showing somebody the positive that they can't see in themselves. And so what's happening is you're introducing this new way of acknowledging them, because it's very easy to see the negative and to see the hopelessness of it and to not have any clue that there's anything positive left in this person. And that's why we do the detective work of the microscopic positive moves have to be acknowledged. But I really believe in the using the word trust in a sentence, because if you say, I trust that you know what you need, I trust that you'll come to me when you need me and you're ready for this, I trust that you're in the process and you'll figure out when you need something different, that is this new orientation for them that gives them hope.
I'd like to make the distinction that you've been making and look at it sort of, you know, you're trying to build a contrast between when you don't see use or you only see low use, wherever your threshold is, that things are warm and familial and loving and engaging. And on the other end, when you do see use, things are neutral and literally colder and darker and alone, and you're left with your thoughts. As much as you can, leave them to their thoughts. And so you've created this real contrast in how you are responding, how you are reacting and responding. And it's based on this central idea of what are they doing with the drinking right now, this moment. And so once you've got that figured out, you say, okay, I'd say there's like a 95% chance he's coming through that door having had a lot of alcohol, not just the 2 drinks that we both decided is what he wanted to try to do to moderate. He's way over the line. It's going to be clear when he gets home. You open the door, sure enough, the signs, you know, the eye is cocked and he's talking a little funny and he thinks he's funny. And so I'm going into the mode of remove rewards, allow natural consequences, remove myself as the biggest reward, right? The formula is pretty straightforward and it applies to every moment of the day and night. You could always ask the question, is my loved one right now high or not? and go into some kind of a behavioral response. And remember, we're doing this because this beam of light, we're actually creating a beam of light of where things are friendly and rewarding and loving. Oh, it tends to be when I'm not very high or high at all, or she thinks I'm not high at all, which means I'm not very high. And so it's good enough. It's good enough what you're doing. And then they have to change how they respond because you've changed how you responded, right? So let's not forget that while we get like 80% of our membership to say they've been extremely helped in how they communicate with their loved one, 56% of our membership tells us that their loved one communicates better back to them.
I think there's an added piece in here too, because I think when this individual that asked this question said, how do I communicate to my loved one without being basically confrontational, but also said, how do I ignore behavior? And I want people to understand that Module 6 is the remove rewards, remove immediate rewards module when your loved one is high or drinking. But that doesn't mean that you're ignoring the behavior. It means that you are disengaging just in that moment, that it's important that you actually do address the behavior and you don't leave an elephant just sitting in the room all the time, right? So it actually isn't ignoring behavior. It's being acutely aware of the behavior, but putting it aside and addressing it later. And they also asked, well, how do I do it without being confrontational? So really it's balancing between confrontational, which is aggressive communication, or passive communication, which is ignoring the behavior and not doing anything about it. Whereas CRAFT and Allies in Recovery, our approach is about being assertive with your communication. And there are ways to be assertive with your communication. Kayla had said something about this earlier, and we've been talking about it in REST meetings all week. Assertiveness is observing the behavior, stating the facts. You can be compassionate, caring, understanding. You can validate. You can invite them in to give you their perspective, but then you have to assert your boundaries, your limitations, your needs, your integrity into the situation.
Yeah, and we have to end, but I just wanted to make one last point, which is that it may take 2, 3, 4, 5 times of your person coming home way drunk and the whole scene playing out over and over again. I don't want you to jump to the treatment and the drinking and that conversation the first time you try this, right? That afternoon when, let's say, the hangover is officially over, because they're a young person and they don't actually suffer that much. In the afternoon, you're going to be looking for them to open the conversation, and you're not going to jump to you've been drinking or you need treatment. You're going to just work with them and just be so glad that they're saying anything to you. And just start to create the opening that will, the next 3 or 4 times it happens, maybe the 4th time, you can say, look, you know, come on, this is happening. And we've seen you do it now 3 times in the last month. And I need to know that you're okay. And I know you've been trying, but you're struggling. I have a list I've been working on. You know, maybe if we add something from this list in, you can cut back on drinking more than the 2 glasses of beer, which is what you promised in your moderation work.
I often say, start it off with words of I feeling statements. Hey, you know what? I'm worried. I got some major anxiety because I went into your room to put the laundry away and I found a couple of bottles of empty vodka underneath the bed as I was walking by. And then last night I saw some words being slurred. What's going on? I have not confronted. I haven't accused anybody of anything. I've stated what I've seen, what I know to be facts. Slurred words, bottles underneath the bed that are empty. And then I'm inviting you in to tell me what's the story, what's going on. So now I'm taking you into account. And that's a way of being assertive, right? It's a way of addressing it, not letting that elephant just sit in the room and, you know, walk around, oh my God, when am I gonna, how am I gonna? And I totally agree with Dominique. It may be way too early to start having the conversation about treatment. And oftentimes, I think it's okay to walk away from those conversations with something like, hey, you know what? Thank you for sharing with me. I don't know how I feel about this and I need some time to think, but we need to kind of have an ongoing conversation. So give me a couple of days and let's sit down and have another talk. Go off, calm yourself down and start to think out a logical plan of, well, you know what? He was also driving or she was also driving. So I need to kind of get in there and assert that I'm not okay with drinking and driving and that for now, the car stays in the driveway. And that's where you're asserting your piece in it, what you need and your integrity and your limits. But I also believe that it's really important to give people the opportunity to see a way out of that as well. You know what? I tell you what, let's think about some ways that you might be able to earn that car back so that people can see, oh, look, there's light at the end of the tunnel, like Kayla was talking about. So that's how you can be assertive. You can be compassionate and caring, assertive. You can get your feelings out there. You can also listen to your loved one, but you're not kind of wavering on being aggressive and being passive, which kind of doesn't get you anywhere.
So I guess it's time to summarize, huh? So it's interesting, just listening to you this last piece, I was realizing that the thread is regulating your system. So what we're talking about here is you being the master of your personal domain so that you're regulating yourself before you do these interactions. You're creating a plan before you have massive intervention. You're looking at the kind of communication you're going to do and planning it in advance and calming your system down so that you're not in reactivity, because what aggression and passivity are both are based on is reactivity. And what we're talking about is if you calm your system down and you come from this middle space of stating the facts, speaking from this calm place without adding too much in, then you actually have a lot more power. So what this is about is taking a sense of power over yourself, over your emotions, over your racing thoughts, and then also how you're going to interact in the dynamic, so that you are just stating the minimum and then using yourself as a tool for behavior change. So if you step out, you're actually creating discomfort. If you step in, you're creating support and encouragement, but you're only doing that when things are good, which goes back to what Lori was talking about before, which is that you do get to step in, but you're only stepping in when you're reacting to something positive. And so that's a different form of hope as opposed to just creating the discomfort over negative behavior.
Okay. Thank you, ladies. It was another wonderful podcast episode, and I will talk to you next week.
Have a good week.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.